Ned Fran. The man, Cyril Farrell, had come with an excellent reputation, and his flamboyant, bravassi style was well suited to Arya's slender blade, yet still. A few days ago she had been wandering round with a swatch of black silk tied over her eyes. Cyrio was teaching her to see with her ears and her nose and her skin, she told him. Before that, he had her doing spins and backflips. Arya, are you certain you want to persist in this? She nodded. Tomorrow, we're going to catch cats. Cats? Ned sighed. Perhaps it was a mistake to hire this bravassi. If you like, I will ask Jorry to take over your lessons, or I might have a quiet word with Sir Barristan. He was the finest sword in the Seven Kingdoms in his youth. I don't want them, Arya said. I want Syria. Ned ran his fingers through his hair. Any decent master-at-arms could give Arya the rudiments of slash and parry without this nonsense of blindfolds, cartwheels, and hopping around on one leg. But he knew his youngest daughter well enough to know there was no arguing with that stubborn jut of jaw. As you wish, he said. Surely she would grow tired of this soon. Try to be careful. I will, she promised solemnly, as she hopped smoothly from a right leg to a left. Much later, after he'd taken the girls back through the city and seen them both safe in bed, Sansa with her dreams and Arya with her bruises, Ned ascended to his own chamber atop the Tower of the Hand. The day had been warm, and the room was close and stuffy. Ned went to the window and unfastened the heavy shutters to let in the cool night air. Across the great yard, he noticed the flickering glow of candlelight from Littlefinger's windows. The hour was well past midnight. Down by the river, the rebels were only now beginning to dwindle and die. He took out the dagger and studied it. Littlefinger's blade, won by Tyrion Lannister in a tawny wager. Sent to slay Bran in his sleep? Why? Why would the dwarf want Bran dead? Why would anyone want Bran dead? The dagger, Bran's fall, all of it was linked somehow to the murder of John Arryn. He could feel it in his gut, but the truth of John's death remained as clouded to him as when he had started. Lord Stannis had not returned to King's Landing for the tourney. Lysa Arryn held her silence behind the high walls of the Eyrie. The squire was dead, and Jorry was still searching the whorehouses. What did he have but Robert's bastard? That the armourer's sullen apprentice was the king's son, Ned had no doubt. The Baratheon look was stamped on his face, in his jaw, his eyes, that black hair. Renly was too young to have fathered a boy of that age. Stannis, too cold and proud in his honour. Gendry had to be Robert's. Yet knowing all that, what had he learned? The king had other base-born children scattered throughout the Seven Kingdoms. He had openly acknowledged one of his bastards, a boy of Bran's age, whose mother was high-born. The lad was being fostered by Lord Renly's castellan at Storm's End. Ned remembered Robert's first child as well, a daughter, born in the Vale when Robert was scarcely more than a boy himself. A sweet little girl. The young lord of Storm's End had doted on her. He used to make daily visits to play with the babe long after he'd lost interest in the mother. Ned was often dragged along for company, whether he willed it or not. The girl would be 17 or 18 now, he realized. Older than Robert had been when he fathered her. Strange thought. Cersei could not have been pleased by her lord husband's byblows, yet in the end it mattered little whether the king had one bastard or 100. Law and custom gave the base-born few rights. Gendry, the girl in the Vale, the boy at Storm's End, none of them could threaten Robert's true-born children. His musings were ended by a soft rap on his door. A man to see you, my lord, Harbin called. He will not give his name. Send him in, Ned said, wondering. The visitor was a stout man in cracked, mud-caked boots and a heavy brown robe of the coarsest rough spot, his features hidden by a cowl, his hands drawn up in voluminous sleeves. "Who are you?" Ned asked. "A friend," the cowl man said in a strange, low voice. "We must speak alone, Lord Stark." Curiosity was stronger than caution. "Harwin, leave us," he commanded. Not until they were alone behind closed doors did the visitor draw back his cowl. "Lord Varys," Ned said in astonishment. "Lord Stark," Varys said politely, seating himself. "I wonder if I might trouble you for a drink." Ned filled two cups with summer wine and handed one to Varys. "I might have passed within a foot of you and never recognized you," he said, incredulous. He had never seen the eunuch dress in anything but silk and velvet and the richest damasks, and this man smelled of sweat instead of lilacs. "That was my dearest hope," Varys said. "It would not do if certain people learned that we had spoken in private. The Queen watches you closely. This wine is very choice, thank you." "How did you get past my other guards?" Ned said. Porter and Kane had been posted outside the tower, and Alan on the stairs. "The Red Keep has ways known only to ghosts and spiders." Varys smiled apologetically. I will not keep you long, my lord. There are things you must know. You are the king's hand, and the king is a fool." The eunuch's cloying tones were gone. Now his voice was thin and sharp as a whip. "Your friend, I know, yet a fool, nonetheless, and doomed, unless you save him. Today was a near thing. They had hoped to kill him during the melee." For a moment Ned was speechless with shock. "Who?" Varys sipped his wine. "If I truly need to tell you that, you are a bigger fool than Robert, and I am on the wrong side." "The Lannisters?" Ned said. "The Queen? No, I will not believe that. Not even of Cersei. She asked him not to fight." "She forbade him to fight. In front of his brother, his knights, and half the court. Tell me truly, do you know any sure way to force King Robert into the melee, I ask you?" Ned had the sick feeling in his gut. The eunuch had hit upon a truth. Tell Robert Baratheon he could not, should not, or must not do a thing, and it was as good as done. Even if he'd fought, who would have dared to strike the king? Varys shrugged. "There were 40 riders in the melee. The Lannisters have many friends. Amidst all that chaos, with horses screaming and bones breaking and Thoris of Myr waving that absurd fire sword of his, who could name it murder if some chance blow failed his grace?" He went to the flagon and refilled his cup. "After the deed was done, the slayer would be beside himself with grief. I can almost hear him weeping, so sad. Yet no doubt the gracious and compassionate widow would take pity, lift the poor unfortunate to his feet, and bless him with a gentle kiss of forgiveness. Good King Joffrey would have no choice but to pardon him." The eunuch stroked his cheek. "Or perhaps Cersei would let Sir Ilion strike off his head. Less risk for the Lannisters that way, though quite an unpleasant surprise for their little friend." Ned felt his anger rise. "You knew of this plot, and you did nothing. I command whisperers, not warriors. You might have come to me earlier. Oh, yes, I confess it. And you would have rushed straight to the king, yes? And when Robert heard of his peril, what would he have done, I wonder?" Ned considered that. "He would have damned them all, and fought anyway, to show he did not fear them." Varys spread his hands. "I will make another confession, Lord Eddard. I was curious to see what you would do." "Why not come to me, you ask, and I must answer, why?" "Because I did not trust you, my lord." "You did not trust me?" Ned was frankly astonished. "The Red Keep shelters two sorts of people, Lord Eddard," Varys said. "Those who are loyal to the realm, and those who are loyal only to themselves. Until this morning, I could not say which you might be. So I waited to see, and now I know for a certainty. He smiled, a plump, tight little smile, and for a moment his private face and public mask were one. "I begin to comprehend why the Queen fears you so much. Oh, yes, I do."
"You are the one sure to fear," Ned said.
"No, I am what I am. The King makes use of me, but it shames him. A most puissant warrior is our Robert, and such a manly man has little love for sneaks and spies and eunuchs. If a day should come when Cersei whispers, 'Kill that man,' Eliel Payne will sneak off my head in a twinkling. And who will mourn poor Varys then? North or south, they sing no songs for spiders." He reached out and touched Ned with a soft hand. "But you, Lord Stark?"
"I think, no, I know. He would not kill you. Not even for his queen. And there may lie our salvation."
It was all too much. For a moment Eddard Stark wanted nothing so much as to return to Winterfell, to the clean simplicity of the North, where the enemies were winter and the wildlings beyond the wall. "Surely Robert has other loyal friends," he protested. "His brothers, his
wife," Varys finished, with a smile that cut. "His brothers hate the Lannisters, true enough, but hating the Queen and loving the King are not quite the same thing, are they? Sir Barristan loves his honour, Grand Maester Pycelle loves his office, and Littlefinger loves Littlefinger."
"The King's Guard, a paper shield," the eunuch said. "Try not to look so shocked, Lord Stark. Jaime Lannister is himself a sworn brother of the White Swords, and we all know what his oath is worth. The days when men like Rhyam Redwine and Prince Aemon the Dragon Knight wore the white cloak are gone to dust and song. Of these seven, only Sir Barristan Selmy is made of the true steel, and Selmy is old. Sir Boris and Sir Merrin are the Queen's creatures to the bone, and I have deep suspicions of the others. No, my lord, when the swords come out in earnest, you will be the only true friend Robert Baratheon will have."
"Robert must be told," Ned said. "If what you say is true, if even a part of it is true, the King must hear it for himself."
"And what proof shall we lay before him? My words against theirs? My little birds against the Queen and the Kingslayer? Against his brothers and the Council? Against the Wardens of East and West? Against all the might of Castle Rock? Pray send for Sir Ilion directly. It will save us all some time. I know where that road ends.
Yet if what you say is true, they will only bide their time and make another attempt."
"Oh, indeed they will," said Varys, "and sooner rather than later, I do fear."
"You are making the most anxious, Lord Eddard, but my little birds will be listening, and together we may be able to forestall them, you and I."
He rose and pulled up his cowl, so his face was hidden once more.
"Thank you for the wine. We will speak again. When you see me next at council, be certain to treat me with your accustomed contempt. You should not find that difficult."
He was at the door when Ned called. "Varys." The eunuch turned back. "How did John Arryn die?"
"I wondered when you would get round to that.
Tell me."
"The tears of lice, they call it. A rare and costly thing. Clear and sweet as water, and it leaves no trace. I begged Lord Arryn to use a taster. In this very room I begged him, but he would not hear of it. Only one who was less than a man would even think of such a thing, he told me."
Ned had to know the rest.
"Who gave him the poison?" "Some dear, sweet friend who often shared meat and mead with him, no doubt."
"Ah, but which one?"
"There were many such. Lord Arryn was a kindly, trusting man."
The eunuch sighed.
"There was one boy. All he was, he owed John Arryn. But when the widow, fled to the Eyrie with her household, he stayed in King's Landing and prospered. It always gladdens my heart to see the young rise in the world. The whip was in his voice again, every word a stroke. He must have caught a gallant figure in the tourney, him in his bright new armour with those crescent moons on his cloak. A pity he died so untimely, before you could talk to him. Ned felt half poisoned himself. The squire, he said. Sir Hugh. Wheels within wheels within wheels. Ned's head was pounding. Why? Why now? John Aaron had been hand for 14 years. What was he doing that they had to kill him? Asking questions, Vary said, slipping out of the door. Tyrion. As he stood in the pre-dawn chill watching Chigan butcher his horse, Tyrion Lannister chalked up one more debt owed the Starks. Steam rose from inside the carcass when the squat sellsword opened the belly with his skinning knife. His hands moved deftly, with never a wasted cut. The work had to be done quickly before the stink of blood brought the Shadowcats down from the heights.
None of us will go hungry tonight, Bronn said.
He was near a shadow himself, bone thin and bone hard, with black eyes and black hair and a stubble of beard.
Some of us may, Tyrion told him. I am not fond of eating horse, particularly my horse.
Meat is meat, Bronn said with a shrug. A Dothraki like horse more than beef or pork.
Do take me for a Dothraki? Tyrion asked sourly.
The Dothraki ate horse. In truth, they also left deformed children out for the feral dogs who ran behind their khalasars. Dothraki customs had scant appeal for him. Chigan sliced a thin strip of bloody meat off the carcass and held it up for inspection.
Want a taste, dwarf? My brother Jamie gave me that mare for my 23rd name day, Tyrion said in a flat voice. Thank him for us, then, if you ever see him again, Chigan grinned, showing yellow teeth, and swallowed the raw meat in two bites. Tastes well bred.
Better if you fry it up with onions, Bronn put in.
Wordlessly, Tyrion limped away. The cold had settled deep in his bones, and his legs were so sore he could scarcely walk. Perhaps his dead mare was a lucky one. He had hours more riding ahead of him, followed by a few mouthfuls of food and a short, cold sleep on hard ground, and then another night of the same, and another, and the gods only knew how it would end.
Damn her!
He muttered as he struggled up the road to rejoin his captors, remembering,
"Damn her and all the Starks!"
The memory was still bitter. One moment he'd been ordering supper, and an eye blink later he was facing a room of armed men, with Jeek reaching for his sword, and the fat innkeep shrieking,
"No swords not here, please, my lords!"
Tyrion wrenched down Jeek's arm hurriedly, before he got them both hacked to pieces.
"Where are your courtesies, Jeek? Our good hostess said no swords. Do as she asks."
He forced a smile that must have looked as queasy as it felt.
"You're making a sad mistake, Lady Stark. I had no part in any attack on your son, on my honour."
"Lannister honour," was all she said. She held up her hands for all the room to see. "His dagger left these scars. The blade he sent to open my son's throat." Tyrion felt the anger all around him, thick and smoky, fed by the deep cuts in the Stark woman's hands.
"Kill him!"
hissed some drunken slattern from the back, and other voices took up the call, faster than he would have believed, strange as all, friendly enough only a moment ago, and yet now they cried for his blood like hounds on a trail. Tyrion spoke up loudly, trying to keep the quaver from his voice.
"If Lady Stark believes I have some crime to answer for, I will go with her and answer for it."
It was the only possible course.
trying to cut their way out of this was a sure invitation to an early grave. A good dozen swords had responded to this dark woman's plea for help. The Harrenhal man, the three Brackens, a pair of unsavory cell swords, who looked as though they'd kill him as soon as spit, and some fool field hands who doubtless had no idea what they were doing. Against that, what did Tyrion have? A dagger at his belt, and two men. Jick swung a fair enough sword, but Morak scarcely counted. He was part groom, part cook, part body servant, and no soldier. As for Yoren, whatever his feelings might have been, the Black Brothers were sworn to take no part in the quarrels of the realm. Yoren would do nothing. And indeed the Black Brother stepped aside silently when the old knight, by Catelyn Stark's side, said, "Take their weapons," and the sellsword Bronn stepped forward to pull the sword from Jick's fingers and relieve them all of their daggers. "Good," the old man said, as the tension in the common room ebbed palpably.
"Excellent."
Tyrion recognized the gruff voice, Winterfell's master-at-arms shorn of his whiskers. Scarlet-tinged spit flew from the fat innkeeper's mouth as she begged of Catelyn Stark,
"Don't kill him here."
"Don't kill him anywhere," Tyrion urged.
"Take him somewhere else. No blood here, my lady. I want no High Lordling's quarrels."
"We are taking him back to Winterfell," she said. And Tyrion thought, well, perhaps. By then, he had a moment to glance over the room and get a better idea of the situation. He was not altogether displeased by what he saw. Oh, the Stark woman had been clever, no doubt of that. Force them to make a public affirmation of the oath sworn her father by the lords they served, and then call on them for succor, and her, a woman, yes, that was sweet. Yet her success was not as complete as she might have liked. There were close to 50 in the common room, by his rough count. Catelyn Stark's plea had roused a bare dozen. The others looked confused, or frightened, or sullen. Only two of the Freys had stirred, Tyrion noted, and they sat back down quick enough when their captain failed to move. He might have smiled, if he'd dared.
"Winterfell it is, then," he said instead.
That was a long ride, as he could well attest, having just ridden it the other way. So many things could happen along the way.
"My father will wonder what has become of me," he added, catching the eye of the swordsman who'd offered to yield up his room. "He'll pay a handsome reward to any man who brings him word of what happened here today."
Lord Tywin would do no such thing, of course, but Tyrion would make up for it if he won free. Sir Roderick glanced at his lady, his look worried, as well it might be.
"His men come with him," the old knight announced, "and will thank the rest of you to stay quiet about what you've seen here."
It was all Tyrion could do, not to laugh.
Quiet? The old fool.
Unless he took the whole inn, the word would begin to spread the instant they were gone. The free rider with a gold coin in his pocket would fly to Casterly Rock like an arrow. If not him, then someone else. Yoren would carry the story south. That fool singer might make a lay of it. The Freys would report back to their lord, and the guards only knew what he might do. Lord Walder Frey might be sworn to Riverrun, but he was a cautious man who had lived a long time by making certain he was always on the winning side. At the very least, he would send his birds winging south to King's Landing, and he might well dare more than that. Catelyn Stark wasted no time. "We must ride at once. We want fresh mounts and provisions for the road. You men, know that you have the eternal gratitude of House Stark. If any of you choose to help us guard our captives and get them safe to Winterfell, I promise you shall be well rewarded." That was all it took. The fools came rushing forward. Tyrion studied their faces. They would indeed be well rewarded, he vowed himself, but perhaps not quite as they imagined. Yet even as they were bundling him outside, saddling the horses in the rain, and tying his hands with a length of coarse rope, Tyrion Lannister was not truly afraid. They would never get him to Winterfell. He would have given odds on that. Riders would be after them within the day. Birds would take wing. And surely one of the river lords would want to curry favour with his father enough to take a hand. Tyrion was congratulating himself on his subtlety when someone pulled a hood down over his eyes and lifted him onto a saddle. They set out through the rain at a hard gallop, and before long Tyrion's thighs were cramped and aching and his butt throbbed with pain. Even when they were safely away from the inn, and Catelyn Stark slowed them to a trot, it was a miserable, pounding journey over rough ground, made worse by his blindness. Every twist and turn put him in danger of falling off his horse. The hood muffled sound so he could not make out what was being said around him, and the rain soaked through the cloth and made it cling to his face until even breathing was a struggle. The rope chafed his wrists raw, and seemed to grow tighter as the night wore on. "I was about to settle down to a warm fire and a roast fowl, and that wretched singer had to open his mouth," he thought mournfully. The wretched singer had come along with them.